Welcome to Women in Comedy, the podcast, with your host, Jasmine.
And Tao.
And today, we're very lucky, we have Rosie Creamer, or you might know her as Rosie Rivette. Welcome.
Thank you.
You made it.
Thank you. I know.
In the end.
Wow. We did it. We are all here.
Well, it's tough with public transport, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Just life, just in Chatsworth with public transport is officially...
Yeah. Is it really that tricky?
I think it's just because I moved out, but I didn't... quite taking the fact that my life is in the inner west, everything.
Like, yeah,
I renewed my gym membership just before I moved back. And it feels like another state. It's ridiculous. I should be grateful, you know, that while I'm staying with my parents, they don't live in Wollongong or another country. Mm-hmm. But it's all right. I'm grateful. I'm just saving to travel. So just keeping my eye on the prize.
Where are you traveling to?
I'm going to go to Paris, particular France, I guess around France and Spain, in around like April, May next year.
Or are you planning to study or perform?
I want to. I would love to perform. I think that'd be so great. Like, I know that Paris has like the Lido and Crazy Horse and all the big shows, mm-hmm. but I figure there's got to be underground. You know, when there are big shows, there are little shows. So I would, it would feel foolish not to go to Paris and perform. You know, I think that would be such a beautiful thing, but I'm such a sucker for culture and romance.
I just feel
like Paris and Spain, or Paris and Barcelona, those particular cities.
Like, oh, you'll love them. And isn't Paris the home of burlesque?
Well, in like burlesque's original roots, because it's interesting, America is kind of responsible for introducing the striptease element to burlesque with all the tassel twirling and stuff like that. But the original roots of burlesque is comedy. It started in Europe. It was kind of like where there was like a division between the lower class and the upper class, and the lower class would like make fun of the upper class, and the men would dress up as women, and then they take the clothes off to reveal themselves as men. And that's kind of where I guess the strip element existed in some way. But it means to make fun of, like burlesque means to mock. But yeah, Europe is where I think it was originally based.
Yeah.
But then I think burlesque existed everywhere. You know what I mean? Even in like the 1800s and possibly before
that. Oh, yeah.
It was just like parody and performance, essentially. Mm. But different cultures have kind of adapted different characteristics and made their own versions of burlesque.
Like transformed it.
Totally, yeah, big time.
So have you seen burlesque in other different countries, and have you seen the differences?
Yeah, I saw it. I actually went when I was in Chile. I went to a show. It was kind of actually quite similar to Sydney, kind of, but more troupe-based, so it was more fused with drag and the queer scene and everything like that. But they still follow those same kind of looks of, like, being pin-up and quite, I guess, styled in a very vintage, glamorous way. But almost more linked to the commercialized idea of burlesque with the feathers and, you know, like the headdresses and everything like that. And then in America, I found... it's all quite similar in a sense. Everyone's usually an independent performer. Mm-hmm. So they don't... A lot of people think that we have, like, an agent or things like that, or we work for a company or a troupe or something. But there are troupes, but a lot of the performers in America were all, just all independent who do a lot of performance art, and they have a lot of dinner shows and things there as well, and a lot more.
And do you find the sense of humour is different between different countries as well, or the style is more, you know, you can pick that style from which country they're from?
America, I think, are cruder, definitely cruder, in a really good way though. They're not, I think, to be a little more obscure and to lean more towards, nudity and all of that, especially in New York. They have, like, a place called The Box, which is really, really cool. And there was this one performer named, I forgot her name, Rose something. She was amazing. She was kind of, she came on stage, she's trans. She had this beautiful, like, Amazonian athletic body, these enhanced breasts, and still had his male genitalia. She came on stage
And she was just in this tartan skirt with this ripped up shirt with all this blood on it, and it was all torn, and she had this bottle of vodka, and she just walked in these big boots. I was just drinking it and just spitting it onto the audience. Oh. And then she got a knife and started cutting her clothes off and had like a prosthetic penis on, because when she squeezed it, it was like she was peeing on everyone. And it was just like really like, whoa, it was just really extreme. But then you'd have these beautiful kind of fable-like burlesque performances where someone was reciting this story, and there'd be this contortionist doing really provocative things on top of another contortionist with a lot of suggested nudity. Yeah. So, yeah, it was, like, really, like, very, yeah, they have very beautiful and extreme views, because everyone's so freaking talented over there as well. They are trained, like, classically as dancers or contortionists or actors or singers. So the talent is just, like, not to say that it's not, the talent is great here in Sydney, but, like, in New York, it's just.
Oh, yeah. Imagine, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's very inspiring. It's intimidating, but more inspiring, which is actually really nice. It makes you very aware of what you have and you can give, but also what you really could work on at the same time.
Well, how did you get into burlesque originally?
It was probably towards the end of high school I started to get really into pinups, like Betty Page and stuff like that, and it's YouTube. I just look her up on YouTube. And I saw this one video of her, and she was in this thing called Teaserama, where it was like set in the 1950s, and it was just different burlesque performers would literally walk onto the camera and they would do a performance and a striptease. So like her and like Lily Sire and Tempest Storm would do these performances, and then I grew familiar with burlesque, and my whole life I've danced and performed, but I've never really excelled at one or the other or found I wasn't good enough to be a professional dancer. I wasn't good enough to be like a professional actor or any of that. But I knew I loved being on stage, and I believed I had presence as a,
what a cop out. I had presence. but burlesque seemed so right. And I've never, with my body, I've always been like comfortable with it to some extent. Good. I have many things I would change, you know, but at the same time, when I'm on stage, I'm very disconnected from any of those insecurities.
Yeah, that's good.
As a side note, because I think a lot of people always say, I don't have a body for burlesque, I can't, because of this or that. And it's just like, trust me, when you're up there, you're not. You're so just, it's different. You know, it's not actually, it's got nothing to do with your confidence. That's a different person to some regard, you know.
Yeah.
But I felt okay with nudity. And I decided to do a class with a lady named Sheena Misdemeanor. And the classes are good. They're helpful, but they only show you so much, you know. And I asked her, I said, I'm actually really interested in doing this. Like, what do you recommend I do? She said, just come to shows, like just watch shows, and you can be a stagehand and you can help out. And I did. And in the meantime, I was just working on a little act in my bedroom when I was still living with my parents, and then an awkward walk in from my mom. And I'm like, I told Sheena that I had an act, and I asked if maybe I could debut at a show.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, sure. And she invited me along to one, and it was received really well. And then it felt right and it felt good. And then I just kind of kept making acts from then on, and then I started getting paid, and then it just started from there.
Cool. Yeah. And how did your mum respond?
She's fine with it. Yeah. She's more like, cool. I wish we had something like that when I was your age. Always. She's like, there was none of this when I was your age. I'm sure there was, but yeah, no, she's good. They're really supportive.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's actually quite amazing, because, you know, sometimes they have ideas of certain things I do that aren't quite accurate, but with burlesque they've never questioned it. And burlesque is the one more thing where I think there are a lot of misconceptions, and you can't really blame people for having them, because the media sets up burlesque every year. It's a different flavor, it's a different angle on it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But my parents have always very consistently understood what I did and been so supportive. I don't take it for granted but I don't know what it's like to not have my parents except what I do, but I know a lot of girls, some parents have no idea, purely because they feel they'd be judged or it wouldn't be taken well by them. So I am really, really grateful that they're very supportive.
And you mentioned that you're very comfortable in your own skin.
You said that didn't have to do with confidence, so what does it have to do with, like, where does that come from?
Totally, I know that sounds really contradictory, but I think it's more like it's character work.
Yeah.
In a sense, like, I think because when I'm on stage, you're no longer concerned about how your body looks. Well, I'm not. I'm concerned about the audience enjoying my performance. Like,
yeah.
You can have the body of a supermodel, but if you're not aware of how your body moves and how to utilize your body as, like, a vessel, you know, then it's not going to make for a good show, because people are either just going – you don't want the audience to be intimidated by you either. Like, you want to show some sense of being equally as human as everyone else, but not just a body. Like, the idea is to show so much personality that people can't separate your identity from your body in order to objectify you. Like, you're a person, and you're up there and you're noob. It's just cool because you don't get to see people behaving in strange ways, almost naked, you know. It's cool, and it just sheds a different light on the body. And at the end of the day, on a stage light, it's like everything comes up. You are completely exposed, and it's nice to show people, you know, that a body is just a body. We all have one.
True.
Yeah. They're all different, and that's exciting. It's actually really thrilling to see a body that you don't get to see every day up on stage and that exposed. Yeah. So much more than these Photoshop, you know, shapes that we see every single day. We're so used to seeing the same silhouette, you know, and I think there's something really erotic and exciting about watching a woman of a different age or background or body shape, women who've had children, women who are about to give birth, you know, like some, the best is when you see a performer pregnant performing. That is, like, really special.
Wow.
But, yeah, I don't know. You're focused on so many other things, like your costume coming off in time. But really, like, or just getting a laugh or anything. There's no room to really worry about whether your cellulite's showing or, you know, if you shave. Oh, you probably, sometimes you do think, did I shave? But the other things, they kind of fly out. Because people applaud you and you feel good when you're up there.
Well, when I bumped into you before you did your show, you were quite sick as well.
You had
the flu, and you still did a great job.
Horrible.
How did you manage?
I think it's the adrenaline. That was actually the first time ever, though, where adrenaline didn't quite save me, and I was genuinely, like, I was having a hard time. But normally the adrenaline just pushes it out. Thank you so much.
You're a professional.
My gloves were getting cold on everything. I think the adrenaline, normally that's what happens. It just kind of, you're only up there for so long as well, you know?
Yeah.
I actually think it's easier for me than it would be for you, because I think you have to be up there for, like, 10, 15 minutes engaging and talking and just, that's, you know, but for me it's like literally 2.5 minutes, and it's just on and off, so your body can usually pull through for 2.5 minutes. But I admire you more so if you got, you know, if you were to feel ill and have to be up on stage in comedy, because also I think
that has happened to me. I had thrown up 20 minutes before getting on stage because I spent that day in the sun for 6 hours, so I had the worst heat stroke, driving to the venue, and then when I got there, it was actually one of the best performances I did, because I was even more deadpan.
That's so funny.
That's interesting. Performing under pressure sometimes is better. I've been quite sick and in pain before too, and then I had to push more, and I think I did a better job. What is with that?
I think maybe it's like your eyes just on the prize and just kind of like getting through it, and all the nerves and everything really fly out the window, you know what I mean? Because, but then also maybe it's a bit refreshing. Sometimes we're really funny when we're just in a really bad way. Kind of is, isn't it?
Well, speaking of funny, you do have a character, Rosie Rivette. I've seen you perform at Fringe Festival, but there was...
Mrs. Rivette.
Mrs. Rivette.
Yeah. Rosie Rivette, Mrs. Rivette. There's really no difference.
Really? Yeah, there you go. She's your
lack of first name.
There you go. Mrs. Rivette. I did see the show. If I recall correctly, you'd broken... Was it your foot?
I did break my foot, but then I broke my leg. Broken foot look like freaking nothing.
Ouch.
Totally. Yeah, I'm still quite amazed that I pulled that show together again after that accident. I got hit by a motor scooter.
Ouch.
I'll just put that out. The reality that it was a motor scooter hurt more than the accident. I thought it was a motorcycle, and some asshole in the hospital had to tell me they're like, it probably doesn't matter. And I, maybe, I don't know, it's just because maybe insurance needs to know. I just need to let you know it wasn't a motorcycle. It was a motor scooter. It was a scooter.
You would have felt better.
Yeah.
Like,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But it does a little. That sucks. Yeah. So, that was a shit ordeal. But again, yes, my tibia broke in half, so I had to get a metal rod put in outside of it, which I currently still have. And I think a lot of time on Endone and a lot of time in my house, and my partner at the time was in Edinburgh doing the Fringe Festival, and I had this surge of like, the messed up thing, I don't know if you've had this when you've been ill as well, is like, a lot of people say this is a great time to harbor creative ideas and to be productive. And yeah, it's like, it's the worst time.
Yeah.
But you just have so much time. Yes. That you're like, okay, I get it. But also not so well in the head. I made a very embarrassing video when I was on Endone where I tried to learn to juggle lemons as Mrs. Rivette. And I kept dropping them on the floor. And the efforts to pick up those lemons with a broken leg.
Ambition.
Yeah. But anyway, I somehow managed to get the courage to do the show again because I was, like I was saying to Tal before on the cuts, it takes me a lot of effort to do that show because there's so much work involved.
It was a great show.
It was really great. The Fringe Festival was really gracious enough to, because I was meant to do it for a couple of runs, but then they offered me one big show with like 170 seats or something at the Factory just for one night. And I think knowing I just had that one night and I just really amped it up and did it. And it was great. I managed to raise money for charity through it and I managed to sell it out and, there was a massive technical difficulty halfway, but
yes.
Happened. Oh, were you there? Yeah.
But you improvised a bit, and it was very funny.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, for some reason, the dialogue came off one part of my act. Like I'm playing with a radio, and I'm waiting for a voice to come on, but the voice just never came on.
Oh.
Somehow the track just we do not even know what happened. Mm-hmm. After we played it again, no problems. It was so strange. I don't know, but I had to ad lib.
Yeah.
And I had to so much that the sound guys didn't actually understand there was a problem. Oh. But I did. I knew. And I had to find an excuse to go backstage, rip my mic off, have a mild panic attack on the floor. and then I remembered, I was like, it's on my iPhone. And I grabbed my iPhone, gave it to my friend, was like, go, just fucking plug it in. And then I came back on stage and just made a joke. To be honest, I don't even remember. You know, when you're so heavily traumatized, you just don't remember. I don't remember. I don't want to.
Can you tell us a little bit about the show?
So it's about this comedy character I have named Mrs. Rivette, and she's the one, the only, the lonely Mrs. Rivette. So her husband died. He fell in a pasta maker, and it's like she fell asleep for like 10 years and just woke up and is having another go at life.
Yeah.
But she's just it's a little mockery of like the idea of hysteria. So it's this idea that she's been very deprived of like human or sexual contact with anyone, and suddenly she rediscovers her sexuality within her own kitchen, and the whole show is about her pretty much just being inside and everything coming to life, and you just don't know what's real and what's not. So like her dead husband speaks to her in the voice of Sean Connery through the radio and he tells her about how he wished they explored their sexuality more before he died.
Yep.
So he introduces her to a fetish radio show. But then the voice starts going from like just being quite generalized and talking to everyone to talking to her very specifically.
Yeah.
And making her do things she really doesn't want to do, like shoving a pearl necklace up her bum or like playing with fruit. But of course Mrs. Rivette chooses a pineapple because little does she know she's meant to rub that on her body, you know? And she bakes a pie, the pie comes to life and they go out clubbing and take drugs and then she ends up fist fucking it later, and there we go. We're now explicit.
Explicit. Yeah, all good.
It's not a kid's show.
I had this wild idea that, like, when I wanted to audition to do clown doctoring, I referenced Mrs. Rivette, and I was like, nudity aside, and of course they were like, well, this is not going to work now. So that sucked. She would be so funny with kids. They just need to not know what happens behind closed doors. But I'm actually doing a show with her in a couple of weeks, which will be really good, to live music. Which will be fun. But she's just a very endearing character who always, she gives things a go. She'll always give things a go, but she doesn't quite get it right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you love her because, you know, she shines a light on that very, I guess, vulnerable side of being a woman, you know, those embarrassing things where we're not quite polished and we're not quite, we're without, not dignity, but grace.
Yeah.
When we're without grace, this is like, you get to indulge in watching that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you come up with the character?
I had, actually, it's funny, I took the choreography from an act I had that was choreography of Betty Page, and Betty Page is known notoriously to be like an amazing, like one of the most famous pinup models and fetish models, but also a horror, like terrible dancer. She's not terrible, like she's great because she moves, but her, she's so awkward and endearing, and like some of the moves she pulls, you're just like, what?
Yeah.
And how are you still so sexy? So I find her choreography really amusing. So I just took some of that choreography and I thought it'd be funny to attach it to a character that would totally dance like that as well.
Would you classify her as a bit like clowning then?
She's definitely, I would say she's my clowning character because she just likes, I play with everything and I really push myself comedically the most with her. And I feel there's something very naturally linked between me and that character as well. Like when I'm her, I feel very in character. Like when I had that technical issue, I it was like my mind was like, just calm down, Rosie, and just sit back for a while and I'm just gonna take care of this. And I just kind of just was her purely. And I think, I hope, I don't know, I feel like I didn't break out of character.
No,
you didn't. I was with her, but that felt really nice. But
is there a huge contrast between you and her?
No, I think there's a lot of characteristics linked to my mum with her. Want my mum to hear that because that would upset her greatly. But I think there are a lot of links between me and her. It's like this weird, like, old face on a young person's body because I'm very facially expressive as well, and I wanted to find an outlet to really, like, let loose with that and be quite crazy. And I love making people laugh. I love being funny if I can be. So she's a really, really good outlet for it. Yeah.
Now, do you also do some modeling? Tell us a bit about that.
I don't know why I do it, to be honest. I don't really think I'm very good at it. But,
disagree.
I don't know. It's funny. Like I do it because I like it. And when people ask me to collaborate or do things, I'm not going to say no because that's so nice. It feels really nice to know that, you know, I think maybe it works because I perform. And once again, maybe it's like a presence or energy thing that imagine there's a difference between a performer who models and a model who models. You know what I mean? So, but it works. It works because, I mean, sadly, but also I guess it's a good thing, is social media presence is really important as a performer, and to do shoots and things is also quite important in gathering a following and recognition and everything. And I'm trying to put more and more video footage up as well, because I think just to display myself aesthetically on the internet doesn't show who I truly am.
Yeah.
You know? But the modeling stuff is fun because it's challenging, and I always like a challenge. Like, you really have to be, it is this weird science, you know, like when you're in front of a camera, to figure out exactly how your face needs to be angled and what you need to do with it, with your eyes, with your body, this and that, in order to kind of hit it and not hit it. But yeah, I still am surprised every time someone asks me if they want to do a shoot. I don't know why. It's not a natural thing for me, you know. And I think because I'm in an industry where there are a lot of women who do it professionally and they're like amazing. I don't know. I feel like quite an amateur in comparison to them. But
I've seen some amazing photos.
Oh, thank you. There are some which is, it's really cool. I think that's another cool thing. It's cool to see a photo that does work and go, whoa. You know, wow, like I have that in me, that energy to, you know, to do that. And that's quite nice. It's probably the one thing that keeps me going with that, is just to.
I think it's harder than it looks, modeling.
I do. Like,
even when I have to take photos for, you know, headshot, I feel so awkward.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it. Like,
just, I know.
It's not natural.
Tough. Yeah.
That's the one thing I've really learned. It's not natural.
No, like, you're right.
And the more focused you are, though, the more that comes across. So the trick is to be unnatural but look incredibly natural.
You've got to be really relaxed and uninhibited. I take good photos. Totally. I've done some modelling, but that was years ago. But, I thought it would be easy. You're so wrong. Mm. And you have to do kind of awkward poses and positions. Totally. The more awkward you feel and the more
stressed you feel,
the better the photo looks. True. I don't understand why, but it just works. It's like all angles and shit.
Down, but suck in and turn your, you know, turn your chest this way, but your waist this way and your hips this way. And it's like,
You learn a lot from watching America's Next Top Model too. And I'm just like, why are they doing, that looks so good.
Yeah.
And so I would take notes.
Some people just have it, you know. It's all about awareness. So everything, and I think that's why I'm drawn to it. Just like being on stage, it's all about awareness. Everything needs to be so much bigger than it feels it is. You need to always feel like you're exaggerating and let that feel normal.
Yeah.
It's very weird. But I think, once again, that's why I like Mrs. Rivette, because she's so lacking in grace, but I can be as extreme as I want to be without having to have the awareness of looking like aesthetically pleasing. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. All that pressure is off. Yeah. You can just be big without worrying about how you look, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of looks, like, would you say you have a particular brand or style? I mean, every time I see it, it seems like you're, like, in a 1950s era. Oh, really
great. So what am I today? Doing, like, Kurt Cobain's best friend.
I think it's a mixture of 1950s, 1970s.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I have this terrible, gross-sounding cough. I got to go for one.
Sorry. Have some tea. Have some tea.
Okay, thank you. I am... I love 1950s and 60s, big time. And I think consistently, like with my hair and makeup, I'll always stay true to that. But then anything from the neck down is quite very, like I will never touch anything that sits on my hips ever again. I will always be a high-waisted gal. I don't know. I think I've, like, incidentally, because I've been wearing high-waisted things since I was 18, I've waist-trained myself without even realizing it. Anytime I remember any, like, boy particularly that I've dated, I'd always, like, sit at the dinner table and, like, complain about how much my stomach hurts or how much I need to pee. And every time they'd be like, babe, your belt, like, loosen it up. What are you doing? Like, of course you're uncomfortable. It's so tight every time. And I always forget because it's just
You look good in what you're wearing. So I wish the jeans suit you. So.
Oh, thank you. It's nice stuff. It's
when
you
shirt saying smoking. Yeah. And the jacket.
Yeah. I love these guys. But I think, like, 1950s bad girl. Is always a good one as well. But, something about the vintage era, I think women just did it so right then. There's this beautiful simplicity but also so much of it at the same time. But it just – there's something very strong and feminine at the same time about that kind of look. And I really love it. It's always – it's always kind of stayed – I wouldn't know how to be any other way now, which is kind of nice. Like, I'm so used now to waking up in the morning. I mean, my old job, I used to work at Argent Provocateur, which is like – a lingerie label from London, and they place a lot of emphasis on looking very, you know, I guess, reminiscent of that kind of era.
Yeah.
Very polished. So every day I do my, like, my eyebrows, my freaking lipstick and that. I'm that girl now, but it's so nice to have my makeup.
But the 1950s era, did that come from watching a lot of movies as well?
Yeah, I think so, and just being obsessed with pinups. Yeah, pinups and burlesque performers, and even the women around me as well. I think we always inspire each other to try different things. Because I'm really grateful to be friends with a lot of, people who work in fashion and design, who work in makeup, who work in performing, and you just pick up things as you go. You see something you like, and then you adapt that. You know, and then you start becoming this beautiful collage of things that, you know what I mean, that you've kind of picked up from around you. Yeah, it's fun. It's nice to always play with looks, I think. I like it.
Yeah.
Always going through different phases or making a new frigging thing to wear every day and then pulling it apart and sewing it onto something else. It's great.
Yeah. Do you think you'll be doing burlesque in 5 years from now?
I think so. I don't think it will be my career. I couldn't ever dream of that. I'd hate it. I'd hate it if it was my career, because what I found right now, because I want to travel in about, like, 6 months' time, I've refrained from getting a job because I will be off again.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty non-committed at the moment, and I'm trying to work a lot of random things, like doing a lot of art modeling and burlesque. But relying on that for income is the most stressful thing
ever, and it makes me resent my work because it's like we're a very professional, wonderful industry, but the people who book us, there are a lot of issues with like invoicing, and I think there's always an issue in the arts.
Yeah, where
you do the right thing and you invoice on time, you come to the, you know, and you perform on time, you do everything right. And then because you're doing what you love and because these people just think you're having fun, they don't take you seriously enough to know that you actually rely on that money to survive.
Yeah.
So I think Burlesque, I always want it to be a part of my life because it's an outlet that is very good and healthy for me mostly. But I would love to work. I mean, I did a degree in screen and sound at UNSW, and I've always wanted to work in like documentary production or something with film. I mean, it's ironic. I quit my internship that was turning into a job with a documentary company because I wanted to pursue burlesque. But I should. I need to come back to that. But I think I would like to have a more stable job and have burlesque as this beautiful, creative outlet on the side that I'm not relying on for an income like I am right now.
Yes. What's the burlesque scene like here? It seems like there's some growth, but a few years ago, if it was me, I would be like, oh, burlesque, isn't that just in Europe?
Yeah.
It's not really big here in Sydney.
It got bigger. It's on and off. So Imogen Kelly is pretty responsible for the revival of burlesque in the 90s in Sydney, Australia. And then I think it died down a bit. And then in 2000s, like I think maybe 2000 and – oh, man, to be honest, I couldn't say. But – it started to pick up again. Now there's a really, really, really strong community. It's very strong. Everyone knows everyone. It's beautiful. Everyone produces shows and books one another, and it's this gorgeous, wonderful, strong and talented community. The really cool thing is going to America, a lot of them think because we're from Australia, all the way from Australia, that we're very behind.
Yeah.
But we're really on – we have very high standards of ourselves. So. That feels really nice. So I think everyone's really proud of what they've accomplished here in Sydney, but it's just the nightlife is so terrible that we don't have as many opportunities to perform. I mean, we're, you know, doing shows where we're it's possibly getting cancelled because they're just not selling enough tickets. Yeah. And that would never be a problem in America
or Europe. Yeah.
You know, and I think we struggle so much. Even Melbourne, I think, is quite quiet at the moment. It's just more the fringe festivals like Perth, which I'd really like to do some spots at next this year. Even that is quite good, but it's not like New York where they have a place called the Slipper Room that has burlesque like every single night and has a cast every single night. Yeah. But the pay's better here. That's one thing I learned.
Oh, doesn't it?
Yeah, pay is terrible. I think pay in general in America is terrible.
Oh, yeah, true.
Everything is tips. Everything is tip reliant. Even drag shows, like you throw tips at drag queens, and drag queens come out for tips. Like I did go-go dancing after a burlesque gig, and that was how I got like my payment for the evening. But here is, despite how not on time people are about it, I do believe we get paid better. Okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of burlesque, of course, did you ever see the movie Burlesque? Like, I watched it, and to me it seemed a bit, I don't know, I didn't know if it was true.
That's good. Burlesque. Excellent.
Yeah.
A lot of people came to burlesque shows after that movie came out. They're like, I saw burlesque, I'm so excited. And then you watch their faces, they're watching the show, and they're like, what is this? Like, oh, that's right, because burlesque movie actually has no burlesque. It has no striptease, you know. I mean, not to say that that's what makes it, but they're showing Americanized burlesque without what America attaches to burlesque, which is a striptease and these beautiful, diverse bodies and women and men, you know. It's all focused on Christina Aguilera being, you know, this country gal moving to the big city with a singing voice. It's just an excuse to put out a soundtrack.
You know? I love her voice, but still.
And, you know, Show Me How You Burlesque song is actually kind of fun, and it's actually a really good, like, modern adaptation of, like, how the music was and everything, and Cher is, like, the best part of that movie.
Oh, yeah, Cher.
Oh, I mean, she's awesome. So that was great. And there is that, when she does that I Am a Good Girl, I think she's on the piano, she's got that beautiful, like, diamante bodysuit or something.
Oh,
that's really good and beautiful. But I guess it's funny. I hate it on the movie, but now I understand. I mean, they want to make a movie that appeals to all ages.
Yes.
And so, of course, the striptease element is, you know, you can't put that in there, but then at the same time you're setting up misconceptions and you're selling a performance style that has adult themes to younger generations, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And there's this weird thing where they're going to go and look for it anyway and they're going to want to do it. And when they discover what it is, that's when issues start occurring. But, yes, so I have mixed feelings about it. It's just
false advertising.
I think it's false advertising. Yeah, absolutely. And there are good bits about it, but there are also some bad bits. And I think it's just setting up those misconceptions because what is so great about burlesque that they don't show is, you know, that idea that it really embraces so many different people from different walks of life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who stripped and want more creative ownership over their work do burlesque. Like a great 50% or more are like ex-strippers or still strip, you know, to make money. Two very separate forms of work that I both, like, that I respect. But, you know, that is a reality and there's no shame in hiding that. Like, no one can sit on their high horse and say, I'm not a stripper when you do burlesque. You are. But, you know, in a unique way.
I guess there's more, in my opinion, probably more dignity to burlesque than there is just to straight stripping, and it's more feminist.
No, actually, I think there's definitely dignity within stripping.
Okay.
Look, I'll be honest, I worked in a club twice, twice, because I was like, you know what, I'm really curious to know what it's like. I have a lot of friends who do it. I actually really need some money. I'm single now, so I don't really have that weird moral compass of, like, you know, wasn't that I was, like, single, and I'm like, woohoo, I can strip. But I just thought, you know what, I'm really curious about it. Okay. And I don't actually want to walk through life knowing how close it was and how much I could have just seen. And, look, I did it, and it's not for me.
Okay.
It's work, but there's definitely dignity. A lot of women who do it are lawyers, are doctors, are teachers, just like anyone else who leaves, you know, multiple careers. And it actually takes a lot of, it's very manipulative and clever. Like the things that they do in order to get what they want, it's actually more the people who come in or who I think with less dignity than the women who are there, because the women who are there know what they're doing and they know what they want. And they're, you know, it's a very sober environment as well. You know, where I was anyway, I met some really great women, but the difference is burlesque is performance art and stripping is work.
Okay.
And it is selling sex.
Yeah.
Burlesque sells more than just sexuality, but stripping is very focused on sex and arousal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's less emphasis on the striptease and leaving it to the imagination. There's a lot more exposure. I think
burlesque is more that entertainment and cheekiness.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And it's for couples, it's for all ages, 18 plus. But whereas stripping, you know, it's very simplistically there for arousal, leaving less to the imagination than burlesque would. But I have a lot of respect for women who do it because it is hard. And I know I could do it again, but it's just not for me. It takes a lot to be able to convince someone to engage with certain people that you wouldn't normally do so. It's a lot more personal. I don't have to interact with anyone when I'm on stage. But they're too, I think a lot of people do say, oh, burlesque is like stripping but classier, but I always kind of shut down that idea a little bit because it's that in itself, it's just a different ball game really. But definitely hard work. Totally.
I've never been into a strip club, but I've walked past plenty of them in King's Cross. And there's always that really dodgy guy outside come on, love, come down. I'm like, no. The outside Porky's or something gross. That place. And I'm just like, this poor woman that worked there. I always feel sorry for them.
No, never do. No way. It's choice.
They're very smart.
We all choose to do it. Look, some are probably idiots and have nothing going for them, but it's the same with, like, anywhere. You know, you see some, we just have idiots who have nothing going for them in the world. You know what I mean? But I think, no, it's all choice. We're lucky enough in Sydney and really Australia where a lot of women don't need, you know, we're so lucky we have Centrelink and things but women who go there actively want to be there, and also the people who are on these clubs don't want women who are you know, heavily intoxicated or inebriated or in a really bad state to represent this club. You know, they are a lot more polished and focused on selling a good image, because I mean that's what brings in the money, you know what I mean, at the end of the day. That it was, and I loved working there because it was so cool to see how it all worked, the system.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting how the waitresses and the strippers kind of like interact with one another. So whenever you meet someone and you sit with them and you get offered a drink, you should always say yes, but you can tell the bartenders when you order a rum and coke, you actually just want a coke.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that way the bartenders get tips.
Mm.
And what they do is they sell stripper dollars to the men so that you get tips.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's all these really great rules that just kind of push you to be very respectful towards all the other girls and, mm-hmm. you know, and to be safe as well. You're always getting checked on if you do private shows and things like that. And
yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. But, I'm too much of a goofball, and unless I'm really in love with someone, it's very hard for me to lend myself to anyone else. So that's the reason I can't do it. But some women are really capable of it.
Yeah.
And that's cool. Yeah.
It's good that you know both sides are
foolish and tripping. Yeah, I'm glad I did. It was for my own, little research project as well. It's nice because you want to understand where certain people are coming from and what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting. Yeah.
So are you planning to take your shows to other festivals overseas or anything?
I've been in such a dilemma with that show for ages where I need help with it. I think I need a producer. There's just something, I think it's the stress of setting it up, and I have a lot of issues with pushing myself. I think I have a lot of confidence issues I need to work through when it comes to my show. But I would love to travel with it one day, but for some reason I haven't. And I know that if I really want to do it, I will.
Yeah.
But I'm not at the moment. My friend just asked me if I wanted to do two shows for the Fringe because the show cancelled. And I was sitting on the train and I was like, oh, damn it, because I want to, but I'm scared, you know.
Yeah.
It's so scary. It takes so much out of me when I do it. But eventually I would like to. I just have to I need to have that aha moment, I think, where I'm ready for it again. Yeah.
Get with your gut.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's it for me. I know we got to go pretty soon.
It's a very busy, very busy day.
I'm sorry.
We're very lucky to have you on the podcast. Yeah, we've had the reschedule before, and you're traveling, performing, and so much on.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Thank you so much.
We went in all directions. That was great. Ended up in a strip club.
Woohoo! Thank you again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, guys. Yeah. Thank you.
And everyone, you can find us in the usual places, Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, not on Instagram at this stage, who knows. Thank you for listening to Women Comedy, the podcast. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.